Before we delve too deep into stories of courage, strength, and rescue, we must explore the basics. After all, you cannot learn to walk unless you first read about how to walk. Matter of fact, a nephew of mine will be 4 years old next week, and due to his stubbornness and refusal to learn the alphabet, he is still crawling. And that's only because my sister let him listen to an audiobook about crawling. But I digress. The first thing that we must ask ourselves is, what is a fire? Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines fire in two ways. The first definition is, the phenomenon of combustion manifested in light, flame, and heat. A bunch of technical mumbo-jumbo written by the elite dictionary barons to confuse us common folk. Let me break down the definition. It's bright and it's hot. Thanks, Webster. Or should I say Poindexter Webster? We also have a second definition, one of the four main elements of the alchemists. As long as you're not an idiot, or from Connecticut, you know that the four elements are earth, air, fire, and water. Every element in today's periodic table is simply a combination of any of the four elements. If you know your chemistry, then your deductive reasoning, again, residents of Connecticut need not apply, can tell you that everything on this planet can be broken down into one of the four basic elements. Here's the catch, folks. Water and fire cancel each other out. Combine one part water and one part fire, and what do you get? Nothing, that's what. It's all a part of a concept in the physics known as the law of conservation of fire and water. Open a science book once in a while, kiddos. Don't believe me? Try lighting a match underwater. No, really. Close this audiobook right now and get in the bathtub with a book of matches. I'll wait right here. Okay, you're back. Didn't work, did it? The fire wants to start, but the water doesn't let it happen because it knows that it's in danger. The water's life force prevents this destruction from happening. Now don't ask me to go into detail about the life force within every object in the universe because I am not a magical scholar and do not pretend to be. I tell you to go ask a wizard, but of course the last wizard died over 100 years ago. Chapter break. I'll finish up the boring science lecture by explaining the other two elements, earth and air. It's not essential to the understanding of fire, but I want you to have the knowledge that my pops never taught me when I was younger. Okay, now in the physical copy of this book, there's an illustration of sort of a compassy looking thing. It's the kind you'd find on a map, except instead of north and south, fire is north and water is south. Earth and air are east and west, respectively. Okay, nerds, now here's a chance to flex your brain nuts. Using the knowledge from the past chapter about fire and water, and having had the drawing explained to you, what can you say about earth and air? That's right. They cancel each other out. That's the law of conservation of earth and air. When you see a gust of wind sweep up a patch of dirt and carry it off the ground and out of existence, you'll know what I'm talking about. In fact, if the earth experienced a strong enough wind, they would both cease to exist. Luckily for us, the four elements keep each other in perfect harmony, thanks to the willpower of the great cosmic bird gods. And that's all I have to say about that.
We come from a proud firefighting family. That's why I sewed my fireman's patch on all of my shirts. And this prompted a lot of questions from people I ran into, like, what does your fire department patch mean? So I thought that I would help everybody out and explain it right here. First, it's shaped like a big shield, you know, because we're defending people from fires. And then, across that shield there's a little sash, and on the sash is our department motto, Put Out Fires. And then, behind the sash is a giant screaming bird. And a lot of people look at that and they go like, oh, is the bird, that's for freedom or for America, right? And it is, but it's something more too. It actually goes all the way back to the origins of fire. You heard about this one? Easy. Back in the day, on Mount Olympus, they had a firehouse. And the chief was this guy Zeus. And Zeus appointed Prometheus, you know, one of his firefighters, to hand out different gifts to all the different creatures. you know, so Prometheus, he gets down to Earth and he's, you know, handing out things like gills for fish and pincers for crabs and different kind of pincers for lobsters, you know, and all sorts of different gifts. And then he runs out at the very end because they didn't buy enough. So he's got nothing left for man. I don't know why he'd save man for the end. I mean, I would have done it differently. But you can't blame a guy for trying hard. So he goes back to Chief Zeus, and he says, Chief, I got nothing for man. The only thing left is fire. But his chief doesn't want him to do that, because fire's the gift of the gods. You know, it's just for them. But Prometheus sees us down there, you know, without any gills or pincers or different pincers, and he feels real bad about it. So he sneaks down from Mount Olympus fire station, and he gives man fire. Now, there's a couple important lessons here that I want you to be aware of. First, never disobey your chief. Because the very next thing that happens is he goes back, and Chief Zeus, of course, knows, and so he chains the guy to a big old mountain and sentences him to have his organs picked out by a giant bird. And we are that giant bird. And that's why it's on our patch. We're helping people from hurting themselves with fire.
Now, my grandmother was a firefighter during World War II. I don't know if you remember from your history classes, but during this war, women filled in for many men's occupations. Ever since then, the ladies of our family have been fighting alongside the men. Grandma O'Brien, my mother, and now me, and God forbid if I ever have a daughter, she won't even go to school. It'll be weight training and firefighting starting at age 8. It's a family business for us. Now, my grandmother was a firefighter during World War II. I don't know if you remember from your history classes, but during this war, women filled in for many men's occupations. Ever since then, the ladies of our family have been fighting alongside the men. Grandma O'Brien, my mother, and now me. And God forbid if I ever have a daughter, she won't even go to school. It'll be weight training and fighting fire starting at age 8. It's a family business for us, like owning a restaurant or having a newspaper stand. I already have my 4-year-old son climbing ladders for breakfast. I try and find ways to stay feminine in this trade full of men. You know, I'm still attracted to men, of course. I definitely am. I'm definitely not a lesbian. Not that I have anything against them. I mean, you are who you are. God made you the way he did. But I'm just saying, I am definitely not one. Sometimes, to get in touch with my feminine side, I cook on the George Foreman. You know, cooking, it's very ladylike. I also, I guess that's really the only ladylike thing that I do, really. Some people ask me, don't you feel weird sharing showers and everything with your brothers? I say, hell, we took baths together growing up. Why should it be any different now? Then they ask, how do you fit into those big suits when you're only 4'11"? And I say, haven't you ever rolled up your snow pants because they were too big for you? The one question that really gets me, though, is how do you manage to rescue a grown man from a fire when you're just a little lady? To that, I have this question in reply. How does an ant carry an object 3 times its own weight? Why don't you think about that one?
So, you know what fire is. How does this help you in the real world? If you met a fire, would you recognize it? Here is a quick guide to recognizing fire. Bullet point. Fire is hot. If you are in the same room as a fire, you will likely find yourself asking, is the air conditioning on? Do I have a fever? This is your first warning sign. Bullet point! Fire is bright. It has often been described as nature's light bulb. Fire is so bright that it can literally light up an entire room. Without electricity, people. It seems impossible, but trust me on this one. Do not try it at home. People in medieval times used fire as light bulbs, and look where it got them. There's a reason we're not voting for King Arthur the 27th. He doesn't exist, because his ancestors are dead. Bullet point. Fire spreads. It is something of a wanderer. It gets restless staying in one place for too long and will not hesitate to spread. If it is allowed, a fire will spread onto nearly anything, including houses, clothing, and even other fires. Question: Is the sun considered a fire? Answer: Yes.
Places that it's okay to start a fire. First, the most obvious ones. A fireplace. It's the place for a fire. Next, the fire pit. It's like a fireplace, but it's in a pit. So it's okay. Next, slightly less obvious, firewood. You can and should start a fire in firewood, but just to be extra safe, you should make sure that firewood is in a fireplace or a fire pit. Even less obvious than the firewood are some common household locations, like a burner. Now, this is a part of your oven, but the name says it all. It's okay to have fire on a burner. This slightly more obscure pilot light. I'm not really sure what pilot pissed off the oven industry, but his name is forever entwined with eternal flame. Some places it's not okay to start a fire. In a fireman, a fire engine, a fire dog, a fire hydrant. None of these are okay, despite the use of the word fire.
I come by every Wednesday to clean the windows of the O'Brien Firehouse. They asked me to say something for this audiobook. Been coming here for 20 years now. The family's fucking weird. I respect what they do. They saved my dog Scruple's life. 6 times, actually. But I stay as far away from that house as I can. Except on Wednesdays.
Hi, my name's Phil. I come by every Wednesday to clean the windows of the O'Brien Firehouse. They ask me to be a part of their audiobook, so, here I am. And, I guess I've been coming here for about 20 years now. That family is fucking weird. I respect what they do, though. They saved my dog's life a couple of times. 6! My dog's name is Scruples, actually. He's a beautiful dog. He's a terrier. Very loyal. We like to go to the park. And I just want you all to know that although these people are weird, they're heroes. Amazing, amazing heroes. But I stay as far away from that goddamn house as much as I can, except for Wednesdays, because that's when I am paid to clean their windows.
A lot of people ask me, how did you become a fireman? Well, as you've noticed, most of the rest of my family are firemen. But I've always been one to go the other way. So for a very long time, I tried to fight it. I was actually a senior at Johns Hopkins University in med school, but a semester away from graduating with honors. I was at the Hooters, celebrating with some of my buddies, when we heard a screaming from the kitchen. And then my O'Brien senses started tingling. I jumped up, and I was at the kitchen door before the smoke started curling out into the dining room. I threw it open, and in that kitchen, the fire... This is how I became a fireman. And as you may have noticed, much of the rest of my family are firemen, all of them actually. But I've always been one to go the other way. And for a very long time I tried to fight it, honest. I was a senior, was 1 semester away from graduating with honors at
Johns Hopkins.
Okay. Are we still rolling?
Still rolling.
All right. This is how I became a fireman. As you may have noticed, much of the rest of my family are firemen, but I've always been one to go the other way. So, I tried to fight it for a very long time, honest. I mean, I was in med school at Johns Hopkins University, one semester away from graduating with honors. And so I was out, celebrating the event with some of my friends at the local Hooters, when we heard a screaming from the kitchen. And then my O'Brien senses started tingling. I leapt from my chair and was at the kitchen door before the smoke started curling out into the dining room. I threw the door open, and inside all the fryers were engulfed in flames. Some of the cooks were making for the back door, but this one waitress, Carrie, she was lying on the ground, flames licking at the corners of her, one of those skimpy shorts that they wear. At this point, I blacked out, but from all accounts, I was in the fight of my life. Tossing water, slamming lids over grease fires, doing everything a fire person should do. Next thing I remember, though, is sitting over Carrie's hospital bed, biting my nails down to the cuticle, hoping she's gonna wake up. After a few minutes, her eyebrows fluttered, and she turned her head to me, and she says, "You risked your life to save me?" And I said, "Well, I always thought you were hot." Then she vomited all over me, just blowing chunks on my face and down the front of my shirt. The doctor came in, he said that was a normal part of waking up, so I didn't hold it against her much. And we're married now. Carrie moved with me to West Schaumburg, so she works at the Hooters there now. And we get along pretty good these days. She's still got a little scar on the cheek in the shape of a heart.
Being on fire is one of the worst things that can happen to anybody. Whether you are a man, beast, or even one of the great cosmic bird gods, being on fire is no fun. But how can you be sure if you are on fire? Use this handy mnemonic device to quickly assess the situation so that you can determine a plan of action. Just remember the letters F-I-R-E. Fire. F. Flame. Do you see flames on your arm, face, or other part of your body? If so, then be careful. You may be on fire. Don't panic yet. For now, just stay calm and move on to the next letter. If there are no flames, then congratulations! You are not on fire. I. Itch. Those who have been on fire have reported an intense itching on their arm, face, or other part of their body, depending on the location of said fire. Does anything itch? If so, proceed with caution to the next step. If not, then congratulations! You are not on fire. R. Really hot. Fire varies in both temperature and intensity, but nearly all fire reaches temperatures of over 200 degrees. Most people find anything above 200 degrees to be hot, to the point of discomfort, most commonly described as really hot. Is your arm, face, or any other part of your body really hot? If so, begin to calmly panic and proceed to the final step. If not, then congratulations! You are not on fire. E. End the suffering! If you hear yourself uttering this phrase, or even thinking it, and all of the previous symptoms apply to you, then beware. You are on fire. Take defensive action immediately. If not, then congratulations. You're not on fire.
So every parent finds the time of their lives when they gotta yell at their kid. Now, my youngest, Melvin, made a mistake one time. He was smoking some illegal drugs in my house, the house I pay for. And, like I said, most parents, they would yell at them. Me? I wanted to teach Melvin a lesson. A good, you know, knock in the head of knowledge. So I looked at Melvin, and I saw he still had the joint in his hand. And I says, "Well, you got two choices here. You can play with that burning stick that could kill you, as we all know fire can cause danger and death. Or I can put it out, as I would with any fire." So I run downstairs to the fire truck parked outside my house, grab my fire hose, bring it up, and I squirt my fire hose at his hand. I also happened to drench him in water and ruined his TV, all of his clothes, and his dresser. Needless to say, Melvin ain't smoking pot no more. I like to think I'm a good father.
I am a man of preparedness and precaution. As such, I make sure there is never any fire in my West Schaumburg apartment. Ever. I'll take a cold shower in the morning if it means not having to worry about a fire heating up my water. And I've got ridden... God, beep! I'll just take that over. I am a man of preparedness and precaution. As such, I make sure there is never any fire in my West Schaumburg apartment. Ever. I'll take a cold shower in the morning if it means not having to worry about a fire heating up my water. And I've gotten rid of my stove long ago. If I want hot food, I rub my hands on it. Safety first, gentlemen and ladies. How to prepare food if you do not have a stove. All right, right now I'm actually going into my cabinet here and checking out some of the provisions that I've got. And, here we go. Example, oatmeal. Normally, you gotta heat up some water, throw in some oatmeal, it gets hot, the oatmeal absorbs the water. Great, delicious oatmeal. Oh no, shit, I don't have a stove because I don't want my house burning down. So, step one, open the packet of oatmeal. Put it in your hand. Now, just start making a rubbing motion. You can probably hear me doing that right now. Are you rubbing? Are you rubbing your oatmeal into your hand? Great. After 30 or 40 minutes, the friction of the oatmeal should get it to warm up to just about the right temperature. Now, you don't want any cold water screwing up your freshly heated oatmeal. So what you're going to have to do is just put it into a bowl or a mug, whichever you choose, and eat straight away as soon as possible before you can let your oatmeal get cold. Now, you can also do this with things such as sandwiches, fresh meats, fish, veggies, the like. You're going to have to experiment for yourself, because just like all ovens, all hands are different, so the friction time is going to change drastically. Also, wash your hands. It's very important to wash your hands. I'm going to get this oatmeal off my hands.
You know, sometimes you gotta stop and give thanks to the caveman who discovered fire. Well, without him, I don't got a job. Sometimes you gotta stop and give thanks to the caveman who discovered fire. Without him, I don't got a job. If there's one thing that bothers me, it's the phrase, liar, liar, pants on fire. If your pants are ever on fire, tell the truth. Say, hey, my pants are on fire. Lying won't ever get you anywhere. Unless you're with your mistress. You're ready.
Sometimes I wish I was there for the Great Chicago Fire. Yeah, I know, you know, tragedy and all. But that was like the Super Bowl of fires. I mean, I like my job. But I can't even imagine waking up one day to see a whole city burning to the ground. And you know, this is your time. This is your moment, you know? So you hop in the truck, just wailing down the street, hosing down everything in sight. Especially that damn cow that started it all. And we don't got anything like that anymore. Technology is too advanced to allow fires of that magnitude. So, you know, we're content rescuing kittens from trees and putting out some three-story buildings. And, you know, it's fulfilling and all. But I long for that day where I can be a hero. I learned in class that a star is just a big ball of fire, just burning and churning up there and out of space. Like a space heater, you know? I shouldn't joke about that. Space heaters are one of the most common causes of household fires. And the name is confusing, too. So, I'm sitting on the hood of my car with Carrie, looking up at the stars, you know, talking about how pretty they are and shit. And it got me thinking. You know, what would I do if I was up there among the stars? And then it came to me. I'd put them out. 'cause that's what I do.
Irresponsible movie characters. 1. Marty McFly and Doc Brown in the 1985 film Back to the Future. In this film, if you recall, their time machine, the DeLorean, travels up to 88 miles an hour before their car zips back in time, leaving what? 2 trails of fire behind. Part 1, who's going to clean that fire up? Who's going to put it out? Did they make a call to the department before they zip back to 1955? I don't fucking think so. Excuse my language. Part 2, what happens if they zip into a fire? Shut up, Sparks! Sparks! That dog, I tell you. They could have zipped right back into a fire in 1955, and then what happens? Who's there to call the fire department then? They're burning alive. They're being immolated. And for all I know, phones don't even exist then. What did exist? TV? I don't know. Radio? Doubt it. Fire? Certainly.
Stop, drop, and roll are very important, because that's how you dodge the ouchies. But there are some situations where you do not SDNR. The Titanic. No SDNR. Just get into a lifeboat, unless you're third class. Then, good luck. Parachuting into Normandy, hopefully during a war. Just jump out of that plane and pull your chute. Now, if you're in a mob, no SDR. Just join the mob. A man is shooting you, run in a zigzag formation. A shark is chasing you, swim some zigzags. A dragon's breathing fire on you, then you SD and R.
Our dog, Sparks, is a shitty fire dog. Sparks is 15 years old. He is not a Dalmatian. He is a Great Dane, and he gets in the way of a lot of things in the firehouse. Sometimes he chews up the suits. Sometimes he chews up the hose. Also, we've never bothered to train him. What a shitty dog.
Fireman instincts are a difficult thing to teach. Some people are just born with them. We were lucky that our father saw that talent within us when we were younger. And then, oh, sorry, I'm getting a text message. Oh, no, I don't want to go out to the bars this evening, so I'm just going to keep recording. Our father was smart enough to identify this within us when we were younger. And so, he, being a fireman himself, cultivated the fireman's instincts, which are as follows. 1. To put out fires. First and foremost, this is an important instinct to have. When you see fire, your first reaction is to put it out. 2. When you think there may be fires, you disregard all other rules and approach to find out if they are fires. If they are in fact fires, follow rule number 1. Rule number 2 can get you in trouble sometimes, though, because there's lots of social mores and things you should know about before you go barging in to discover whether or not there's a fire. Like I know my first time, I heard some yelling from my pa's room, back when he was still with us, and I burst through the door to see him, with another lady, doing, the things you do, in the back room of the firehouse, if you catch my drift. Needless to say, there were no fires there, except the ones in their loins, and so I was unable to put anything out, at least intentionally. So sometimes you're wrong about rule number 2, but I still feel it's important to check.
I'd like to correct some common misconceptions about the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire. First of all, Harry Truman, not a fire. Doris Day, not a fire. Red China, not a fire. Johnny Ray is not a fire. And South Pacific is a musical, not a fire. I never really understood that song anyway. It's just a big list of things. I mean, what does Stalin have to do with hula hoops and Wheel of Fortune? Anyone could write this, just open up a bunch of encyclopedia pages. I mean, if you're gonna write a song called We Didn't Start the Fire, at least include fire in your list. And why are we starting a fire in the first place? We should be putting fires out. Which leads me to my real point. The best way to prevent fires is not to start fires at all.
Now, I know it's a tough economy. I mean, 2008 has not been good to us so far. But one thing that I very much resent is the use of the term getting fired. I understand there's a lot of people losing their jobs, a lot of people being laid off, but you don't know the first thing about getting fired. So when you're sitting there, staring your boss down, trying to keep the tears back, just imagine the difference between what you're going through right now, the slightly life-altering, emotionally challenging experience that you will have to take back to your family and friends in embarrassment. Compare that to having your body consumed by thousands of degrees worth of flame and being slowly roasted as you try to save a kitten's life. That's what getting fired really feels like.
One common stereotype of firefighters is that they spend all of their time rescuing kittens from trees. This is an unfair label that I'd like to finally see die. In all of my time serving, how many cats have I actually rescued from trees? 72.
So, we got this dog named Sparks, and I was thinking, you know, why does every firehouse gotta have a dog? Why not a cat? So I got us a cat, and I painted him so he looked like a Dalmatian. So I put a bunch of black spots on him and things like that, but he was kind of small. So I fed him a lot of beef jerky to make him like a big fireman's dog. Changed his name to Fudgy. That cat is now dead. May he rest in peace, Fudgy.
If there's one thing I hate more than a shitty fire dog, it's a shitty cat painted up to look like a shitty fire dog. I hope he burns in hell. Goddamn cat. Where the hell did all that black paint go? I saw it in the closet before. Oh, damn it, Chair!
I'll never forget the time I took my 4-year-old son, Geraldo, to a wrestling match. He asked me, "Mommy, why aren't you like the other moms?" I looked him in the eyes and I said, "'Cause I save lives." Then he asked, "Mommy, why are fires so mean?" And I said, "Because they're of the devil and their only purpose is to destroy things." Then the crowd seemed to disappear a little, and little Geraldo asked me, "Mommy, I have lots of uncles, but where's my daddy?" He almost had tears in his eyes. And he asked me, "Did daddy die?" And I said, "No, baby. He's out there somewhere. And he's probably still working at that one bar in Tijuana called Fuego." Fuego means fire in Spanish.
These are the names of the cats I have saved from trees. Scratchly, Muffins, Nunu, Plopkins, Mr. Kittens, Spike, Ninja Cat, Kiki, Madam McKinley, Princess, Princess Kittensley, Princess Cat, Cat, Super Cat, Bouncers, Paws, Paws Jr., Paws the Third, Death Star, Mittens, Treetop, Bunchkins, Harriet Tubman, The Claw, Friends, Klu Klux Cat, Garfield, Another Garfield, Yet Another Garfield, Felix, Another Felix, Fritz, Rumpel Catskin, Grandma Fluff, Boat Boat, Fido, Growlsworth, Perfection, Fudgy Ripple, The Boss, Rattlesnake, Puffball, Craftsman, Pikachu, Charlie Brown's Cat, Meowcat, Portsmouth, The Avenger, Balrog, Carl, Albuquerque, Sonic, Clifford the Big Beige Cat, Fatty, Fangsley, Clu-Clu, Howard, Stripes, Meatballs, Groundhog Day, The American Dream, Yawgmoth, Q, Mr. Cutesy Woo, Crackers, Ron Weasley, Ron Weasley's Cat, Daddy, Outcats, Confucius, Palo Alto, and the Grand Catian. I cannot understate how much I hate cats and the people who own them.
As firefighters, we typically view ourselves as fighters of fire. However, there are a number of misconceptions about firefighting which I would like to clear up at this very moment. The main misconception being, all fires are worth fighting. This is simply a falsehood. Many fires are not worth fighting, and as such, they exist outside of the firefighter's jurisdiction. For example, birthday candles are typically not very useful unless they are set on fire. If you see a birthday candle being lit on fire, do not call the firefighters. There will be nothing we can do for you. Instead, blow them out yourself. This is actually useful as that is part of the birthday candle's original intention. And sometimes if you do this, you are granted one wish. Be sure not to tell the wish to anybody though, otherwise you may have misfortune, like your house being set on fire. In which case, we would be able to help you. The second thing that firefighters are not allowed to fight are tiki torches. These can be purchased at the Home Depot or other stores like that and put around your backyard in the summer. Again, these are products that were designed to be set on fire. If you see a tiki torch burning, do not call us. There is nothing we can do for you. I mean, we could put out the tiki torch. We have the capabilities, but that would be a job better suited for you or whoever is in charge of the barbecue. Other things we cannot put out include charcoal or the Chicago Fire, which is actually not a fire per se. Rather, it is a sports team that was named after a fire that we were unable to put out. Also, there are fires that exist outside of our jurisdiction because they are metaphorical in nature and do not cause any harm to anyone. These types of metaphorical fires include fire in the belly, which is used to describe someone with vigor and ambition, not any sort of flame that can do damage to you or a loved one. Also, setting the night on fire, possibly with sexual aids. Very useful, but not to us. We do not have the capabilities or the jurisdiction to extinguish said fires. So in conclusion, if you're setting something on fire and you do not know if you should call us or not, ask yourself this question. Am I supposed to be setting this on fire? If the answer is yes, congratulations. You do not need us. If the answer is no, then you should probably give us a call. And if there's ever an overlap, like you set a birthday candle on fire and use it to set a bank on fire, you should probably give us a call.
The following is a message to all cows that wish to repeat history and attack the great city of Chicago. Moo. Moo. Moo, moo, moo. Moo. Moo.
Feel free to take it again, whatever.
The following is a message to all cows that wish to repeat history and attack the great city of Chicago again. Moo. Moo, moo. moo, moo. Thank you.
Dear Santa Claus.
Hang on, take that one more time.
Okay.
Slightly farther away from the mic.
Okay.
Okay, that should be good.
Dear Santa Claus, I would like to apologize on behalf of myself and my wife, Carrie, for leaving the fire on last Christmas Eve. We were watching the Spike TV Star Wars marathon and fell asleep on the couch. Upon waking, we quickly went to the bedroom, neglecting, in a shameful lack of insight, to put out the fire. We noticed the next morning that there were no presents underneath our tree, although, to my knowledge, we had both been very nice this year. So I hope that you accept this extra-large plate of cookies as an apology, and that you will continue coming down our chimney, bearing gifts and Christmas spirit in future years. Sincerely, Joseph O'Brien.
Whenever you're ready.
Us firefighters have been waging war on fire since our profession began. This is because eventually we would like to work towards a world where there is no fire whatsoever. Now, in continuing this fight, we have to make sure that we not only train ourselves to fight fires, but we train our children as well. It is important to let your child know that even though fire is their enemy, they cannot be afraid of fire. After all, if you are afraid of your enemy, it only gives them more power. So, I suggest getting your child started at a rather young age. Let's go with 4 or 5. As a little exercise, once a week, make sure you put a flaming log in their room next to a very deep bucket of water. The child will have to learn to fend for himself, and eventually, he will no longer be afraid of fire. Plus, he will know how to use the resources around him to fight the fire. Now, as time goes on and your child becomes more adept at fighting the fires, make the water harder to locate. Do not include the bucket in the room. Make him find it. Or make him go outside and get a hose and fight it like a real fireman. Remember, prevention is the best way we can live in a world without fires.
Whenever you are ready.
So as firefighters, we sometimes make mistakes. The major one is forgetting when you're on duty and off duty. My one, which I am ashamed to say, happened in the Olympic Games of this year, 2008. And, well, we all remember Li Ning, who was carrying the Olympic torch. I thought she was an arsonist, so I tackled her. It's actually him.
That's all right. Is it? Who
knows?
All
right, I'll try that one again.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
So, as firefighters, we all make mistakes. The major one is forgetting when you're on duty and off duty. The biggest one I've done, and I've had a couple, I have to say, was during the Olympic Games of this year, 2008. I was watching the opening ceremonies, and this person was running, carrying what looked like a stick on fire. And I'm thinking, it's an arsonist. We're all gonna die. So I use my O'Brien's senses. They start tingling. And I chase this person down, yelling, "Stop it! Stop it! You're gonna kill everyone!" And I tackle them onto the ground. Turns out the Olympics have a ceremony where they have a torch and they light this big thing on fire. I made a mistake that day, but since then I haven't been ashamed that I'm always on duty.
You know, people ask me relatively often, "Hey, Chairman, what's with that religion of yours?" And let me tell you, I looked all over for the perfect religion. Let me tell you, I started with Christianity, but boy, have you ever been in a Catholic church? It's like candle after candle after candle. It's like, what did Christ die for our candles? Yeesh. And then I tried Judaism. That lasted only about 8 crazy nights of me panicking in front of a menorah, if you know what I'm saying. I tried them all over the world. I even tried that Hindu stuff. You ever heard of that Hindu stuff? I was all into the Hindu stuff until I
ran into the idea of this god Shiva. Too many arms, which can create too many fires. It just seemed a little dangerous for me. That's why the day I finally found peace was the day I finally decided to pray only to the great cosmic bird gods. For the ultimate fireproof nighttime experience, sleep underwater. You may laugh at the idea now, but you'll be thanking me one day when everything in your home burns down except for your hyperbaric aqua sleep chamber. These chambers cannot be purchased yet, as far as I'm aware, but films such as Star Wars and Batman and Robin have taught me that this is a possibility. They can and will save lives once they are invented. Until then, here's a quick fix. Get a simple scuba set for breathing, and every night step into your bathtub, clutch your mystic amulet in your hand, and say a quick prayer. Ah, fuck. Damn it. Okay. For the ultimate fireproof nighttime experience, sleep underwater. You may laugh at the idea now, but you'll be thanking me one day when everything in your house burns down except for your hyperbaric aqua sleep chamber. These chambers cannot be purchased yet, as far as I'm aware, but films such as Star Wars and Batman and Robin have taught me that this is a possibility. They can and will save lives once they are invented. Until then, here's a quick fix. Get yourself a simple scuba set for breathing, and every night, step into your bathtub, clutch your mystic amulet in your hand, and say a quick prayer to Agualili, the great cosmic bird god of water.
I'm sorry. I told the boys I wouldn't do this, but I am going to get political at this moment. I am sick and tired of Barack Obama's pro-fire agenda and all the hippies who perpetuate the insane fire-friendly propaganda to this nation. It seems innocuous now, but believe me, fire can hurt you, and it can hurt your children worse. Do we really want to live in a country where everything is on fire at all times? I know I certainly don't. And I know if Alexander Hamilton heard people saying that, he would be rolling around in his grave. Do you really want your face on fire? Your parks, your schools, your baseball stadiums? How will you enjoy them if they are burning to the ground? Now, I don't really follow politics, but every day I write my congressman a simple letter composed of large font newspaper letters that I clip from headlines, spelling one simple sentence: no more fires. It's a handwritten letter, so I know that it gets read. Follow my lead, and you can do this too. Thank you, and may God bless the non-on-fire United States of America.
You ready?
Here's a little-known fact about fire. The term liar, liar, pants on fire is actually about a real person. His lie? My pants are not on fire.
A few years ago, back before I met Carrie in my wilder days, I was having some drinks with a lady who seemed very keen on the color of my hair. Now, with so many O'Brien brothers, it would be inevitable that at least one of us would have red hair. And so at the time, I was quite flattered by her appeal. Because a lot of times, redheads do not get they get the short end of the stick. So, we go back to my place, and things are heating up, if you know what I mean. And all of a sudden, she lets it slip that she's always wanted to be with a, and I hate to use this slur, fire crotch. Now, I find this term offensive for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, because if you can imagine what it would actually be like to have sex with somebody whose crotch was on fire, you would never use this term. Or you would at least use it sparingly and when appropriate. A person whose crotch is on fire would very likely cause severe burning of the crotch of the person humping that crotch. Unless, of course, the pounding of the two crotches against one another were enough to remove the oxygen from that environment, in which case the fire of the former crotch would be quickly extinguished and allow the lovemaking to continue at the path and rate it was previously going. Were this not the case, though, you would be in excruciating pain and perhaps never be able to love again. Secondly, I dislike this term because there are so many valuable and wonderful alternatives if you wish to be offensive to someone with red hair while you are in bed. Here is a short list of the terms I thought of in the past couple minutes that you can use when going to bed with someone with red hair to avoid using the FC word. 1. Ginger. 2. Redheaded stepchild. 3. Red ant. 4. Ladybug. 5. Rash. 6. Lasagna head. 7. Bloody Mary. 8. Red dragon. 9. Clifford. 10. Red China, primarily for red-headed Asian men. 11. Elmo. 12. Mars. 13. Red wine. And 14. Lion-O. All of these would be appropriate and almost equally insulting if you wish to berate a red-headed man in bed. Please consider using them instead of the former more offensive term.
Could you do me a favor real quick and just read the list again?
Yeah, because that's what got all jumbly. 1. Ginger. 2. Redheaded stepchild. 3. Red ant. 4. Ladybug. 5. Rash. 6. Lasagna head. 7. Bloody Mary. 8. Red dragon. 9. Clifford. 10. Red China, primarily for red-headed Asian persons. 11. Elmo. 12. Mars. 13. Red wine. And 14. Lion-O.
Okay.
A note on Christmas trees. Don't buy them. I cannot tell you how many Christmas tree fires I've had to put out during the holidays. If you have to get one, get a plastic tree. I swear to God, your real tree is 80% likely to ignite. I know this because out of the 100 trees in West Schaumburg, 80 of them have ignited. One thing I do not appreciate is crank calls. It's like all the guys in West Schaumburg know when I'm going to answer the phone. They say things like, "Oh, hey, there's a fire right here in my pants." Real original. Okay. Restart. Restart.
Okay, take it again.
I'm going to lose it. Okay. One thing I do not appreciate is crank calls. It's like all the guys in West Schaumburg know when I'm going to answer the phone. They say things like, "Oh, hey, there's a fire right here in my pants." Real original guy. Or my favorite. "Hey, I must be the smoke in a burning room because I'm definitely rising." "Listen, Jackos, this is my job. I may have to save your life one day. 911 is an emergency line, so take your sexy talk and tell it to the garbage."
Whenever you're ready.
The whole thing?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. One thing I do not appreciate is crank calls. It's like all the guys in West Schaumburg know when I'm going to answer the phone. They say things like, "Oh, hey, there's a fire right here in my pants." Real original guy. Oh, or my favorite. "Hey, I must be the smoke in a burning room, because I'm definitely rising." "Listen, Jackos, this is my job. I may have to save your life one day. 911 is an emergency line, so take your sexy talk and tell it to the garbage."
It's important to know if your fire department is doing a good job. I can happily say that the West Schaumburg Fire Department is at an 82% life-saving rate. Now that is a B-, everybody, which puts us well above average.
And now I would like to say a couple of things about fire dogs. Number one, fire dogs are not resistant to fire. I cannot stress this enough. If you light one of them on fire, they will burn. Number two, fire dogs do not breathe fire. You are thinking of dragons. It does not matter how much gasoline you feed them, they will never produce fire from their nostrils. Get it through your heads, you idiots!
The following is a response I got from a cow in West Schaumburg. It reads, "Moo, moo." Touché, cow. Touché.
Cow, man.
Every time I'm having breakfast in the morning and I pour some milk into my Cheerios or Wheaties, I laugh, stand on one chair, pump my chest, and say, I am, in fact, drinking the blood of my enemy.
Whenever you're ready.
One thing that unnerves me is the apparent commercialism of fire. I know everyone's gotten used to lots of other things being commercialized, like Christmas and bikinis and marriage and things like that. But fire is one thing we need to stay vigilant about. But lately, I overheard someone saying they were having a fire sale at their store. Now, this was the last straw. No one should be making fires, let alone selling them. And if you are using the selling of fires to promote the resale of your other products, well, I just want to get in there and hose you down.
As a firefighter, I am entitled to a number of days off per year. Normally, I donate all of my days off to charity, but there's one day every year that I refuse to work. The 4th of July. Since age 12, I have never been around for the 4th of July. There are many types of fire that I will bravely charge into, but I am not afraid to admit that one type of fire scares the living daylights out of me. Fireworks. I've managed to avoid the sight, sound, and smell of fireworks for 30 years now, ever since a Roman candle blew up my pet ferret, Mr. Sneaks. That was the day I built the bunker, to avoid this menace to both society and my life. My bunker is built in a secret location, West Schaumburg Town Square, next to the library's east entrance. Fuck. I'll splice it back into the second paragraph. Okay. My bunker is built in a secret location, West Schaumburg Town Square, next to the library's east entrance, only made accessible by finding the third blue rock and knocking four times. Once the sewer grate swings open, I descend the stairs and punch in my secret code, backdraft. The ladder appears and takes me to my 12,000-foot... The ladder appears and takes me to my 12,000-square-foot steel bunker, complete with bathroom, three record players, and, of course, a shrine to the bird gods. I stay there every year on Independence Day for 24 hours straight. Because of my diligence, I have not seen fireworks in 3 decades. Some say, Jer, isn't it cowardly for you to stay in an underground bunker every year on the one day that fires are most likely to spread? To which I say, hey man, this is my day of independence. Fuck off. Excuse my language. The roof. The roof. The roof is on fire. Put it out, or everyone in the city will die. Question. What was the largest fire in Earth's history? Answer. Oh, I don't even want to think about it. When the Native Americans drink booze, they call it fire water. You don't see too many Native Americans nowadays, do you? Coincidence? No. Stop drinking fire.
When you're in the Boy Scouts of America, you are not allowed to start a fire unless you have a fire card. You must go through a series of tests. You must go through a series of tests administered by the Scout Masters. Once you have demonstrated that you sufficiently understand fire and its ramifications, you are allowed to carry matches and start fires. I propose that this be the policy of the United States of America. Are you starting a fire? You better have a fire card. Light up that cigarette? You better have a fire card. Then we can put these people in jail if they do not have it, and society will be safe once again.
Whenever you're ready.
As much as I dislike fires, there is something to the fact that we have pretty much infinite job security. The other day I was watching the movie RoboCop, and I could see how easy it would be to replace the job of a police officer with a highly trained and effective robot. I feel like that would not be possible for the fire department. I mean, mainly because a robot would melt in the many degrees of a fire. But also because working inside of a fire takes highly developed skills and senses, the likes of which a robot would probably never evolve, unless we get one of those fancy artificially intelligent robots, in which case, I think then we're all screwed.
Every once in a while on TV and film, you see that iconic scene where a bunch of kids are playing with a firefight... Every once in a while on TV and film, you'll see an iconic scene of a bunch of kids playing with a fire hydrant that they busted open with a wrench or something. Now, some might think this is illegal. I cannot promote this behavior enough. Stop the fire before it starts, I say. Get these kids covered in water. That way, if fire touches them, big deal. It'll just cancel the water out. Conservation of fire and water, people. Have you read your books yet? Your science books?
After showing a draft of this book to my police officer friend, I discovered he was highly offended by an earlier chapter in which I elucidated how easy it would be for a robot to take his job. He pointed out to me that his job is very effective and very difficult and not as easily replicated by a robot who can just walk around yelling and occasionally shoot boom boom. So, he also informed me that on the internet there is already video footage of a robot fighting fires. This made me very scared, and I had to consider what I may do if the fire department is entirely replaced by robots. Now I know West Schaumburg is not a town to be quickly wrapped up by the newest techno craze, but it is very likely that a cheaper and more efficient fire department full of robots could one day take all of our jobs. In which case, I'd probably become a robot mechanic or a teacher of robots, because that's the sort of thing that isn't going out of business anytime soon.
Irresponsible movie characters. Pyro, from the film X2, X-Men United. In this film, the character Pyro cannot create fire, he can only manipulate it. Leave the goddamn fire alone, kid! What are you gonna do, start a fire? You wanna do something constructive? Make yourself manipulate water. At the very least, air or earth. Which bird god are you praying to anyway?
Go ahead. So my youngest, Melvin, came home from school the other day and was so excited about some rhyme he learned about in school. I said, Mel, what's this rhyme? He reads it to me. Hey diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such sport, and the fork ran away with the spoon. What the fuck? Do you not see this? The cow jumped over the moon. This is nothing but the cow's attempt to control space itself for military purposes. Ladies and gentlemen of West Schaumburg, the great cow invasion is starting. Whose side are you gonna be on?
Okay, go ahead.
We spend a lot of our time at the firehouse, made more so because we're all family here at the West Schaumburg Fire Department. We, like to be fair to each other, though, because sometimes a body needs some privacy. The only unfortunate part of this is that the firehouse has a room full of bunk beds and a gym, an office, a giant fun slippery pole, and then a garage for the fire engine. This doesn't leave a lot of room for a body to get privacy. So we've worked out a few simple strategies to help us feel private, even in public. Strategy number one, stop snoring and farting while you sleep. This isn't something that's easy to control, but after a lot of terrible taunting and occasional bloody and painful pranks, you start to get it subconsciously. Number two, don't hang out on the fire pole, because people might need to use that. If you think you're going to get some privacy hanging in the middle of space from your feet, be aware, if the bell rings, seven or eight burly men or women are going to be sliding down as quickly as possible. You may get knocked off, hurt, bruised, battered, or at least embarrassed. Number 3. The fire engine is not an acceptable place to bring your significant other or random pickup. Also, might be used in case of a fire. And the last thing you want, both for your romantic life and for your professional one, is to be in the back of a bumpy fire engine when it takes off. You never know what that's going to do to you.
Firehouse etiquette. The big, fun, slippery pole. Every firehouse is equipped, of course, with a big, fun, slippery pole. But here is a quick list of do's and do nots for the big, fun, slippery pole. Do. Do slide down the slippery pole when there is a fire that you need to get to. Do not attempt to climb up the pole to get to bed. Do polish the pole daily to keep it fun and slippery. Do not let your child slide down on take your child to work day. Many a nephew has been hurt this way. Do put pillows at the bottom of the fun slippery pole just in case. Do not put the firehouse icebox on the bottom of the fun slippery pole when you are grabbing a steak. When somebody is grabbing a steak out of the icebox, it could be the last steak they ever eat. Do! Do! Put silly signs in front of the fun slippery... Do! Put silly signs in front of the fun slippery pole on April Fool's Day, advertising that the pole is out of order. Do not cut sections out of the fun slippery pole, actually making it out of order. This is no fun. This is no fun. Do! Say wee as you are sliding down the fun slippery pole. It is fun, after all. Do not scream, "This pole is slippery!" while descending the fun slippery pole. It's slippery, we all know that. Move along. Do have pleasant dreams about the fun slippery pole. It's there. It's there for you to dream about. Do not have nightmares about the fun slippery pole. I've learned this the hard way. It was dressed like a clown.
And go ahead.
The number one question we get as firemen is, "Hey, firemen, where do you keep those fires?" Well, let me tell you a little secret that we have in the O'Brien Firehouse. When we catch the fires, we put them in a little bin. We take this bin to the basement of our firehouse. We put it in a larger bin. Something to be noticed here. Never release the fires from this huge bin in our basement, or else a huge fire cloud will envelop the entire West Schaumburg area. A little piece of advice for you.
Dear male residents of West Schaumburg, I got something to say to you. I am sick and tired of all these mystery packages that are showing up at the door of the firehouse addressed to me. I do not appreciate the sexy fire lady uniform that I have received. I have no use for it, and I do not find it funny. Nor do I appreciate the sexual toys I have received with fires on them. Listen. I am still a lady, even though I may have a mustache growing in, I do not wear makeup, and I have enormous thighs. That does not make me any less of a woman. I live with all my brothers. I got no one to impress here, all right? Now, the next time I get one of these hilarious packages, I'm going to take that fire pole that we have in our house and stick it where the sun don't shine. You hear that?
No book about the West Schaumburg Fire Department would be complete with a little salute to some of our fallen brothers. Now, it wasn't always...
Hang on. Maybe start that over, because you said it wouldn't be complete with a tribute.
Oh, oops. Now, no book about the West Schaumburg Fire Department would be complete without a tribute to some of our fallen brothers. It wasn't always an all O'Brien shop. You see, I was the third O'Brien here, and there were a couple of other guys who took up residence before I was here. And slowly, as they retired or met their fate at the hands of a vicious fire, the rest of us moved in. But slowly, as some of them retired or met their fate at the hands of a vicious, merciless fire, the rest of us moved in. So, in some part, this book is dedicated to you, Larry Firecrusher Sanders, John the Flame Retardant Bernie, Evan Fire Smash Clock Good.
More.
Seven more. I'm still rolling. Okay. Dwight Heat, the Miami Heat, Balancing, and of course, Carol Ann, the Lady Burner, Goodman.
I remember some more names of fallen brothers. I remember some more names of fallen brothers from the firehouse. Let's see, there was Michael Stovetop Greenwood. We had Jeffrey... There was Jeffrey the Hearth McGinley. I'm going to edit this all out once I think of another one. Phil Matchbook Johnson. McCool is writing one for me, so I'll just wait till it's done. Let's keep recording in the meantime. You started it, Sad Sack. Eric won't go out in a Viking funeral. Eric won't go out in a Viking funeral, Williams. Bill the Inflammable Johnson. Who else was there?
Biff Conflagrator Jarenson.
Biff Conflagrator Jarenson. We didn't really like Biff or his nickname.
About Steve Butane John Cat. I don't know his person last name.
Steve Butane Johnny Cat. And actor and comedian, John Candy.
Okay, go ahead. So I was looking at the wall of people, our brothers, who have died fighting the fiery death machine. And there are a couple... there were a couple that I had very good memories of. There was John... Pyrogopoulos, Eric Fitzgerald, the third degree burn. this is a lot harder. I hate this. This is too much fun, though.
Maybe we should write some of these out.
Fire etiquette. The shitty fire dog. Every firehouse comes with a fire dog, and if it's anything like Sparks, it's a piece of shit. Here is a quick list of do's and do nots for your fire dog. Do bother training your dog at some point. Do not feed your fire dog chicken sandwiches. Even if you are eating chicken sandwiches for lunch, feed it dog food. Trust me. Do take your dog with you along on firefighting excursions. Do take your dog with you along on firefighting excursions. It could use the exercise and the experience. Do not teach your dog to play Xbox. Also, do not have an Xbox in your firehouse if you expect the dog to play it. Just common sense. Do teach your dog tricks like sit, lie down, and get the hose, Sparks. Do not teach your dog tricks like change it to TBS, change it to Spike TV, get me the remote, get your own chicken sandwich, Sparks. Do! Okay, that's all.